This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to Row One Seat One podcast. This is Bostonuga. Ben is here. This is the Wrestling Road Trip Edition Part One. This is the Southern Underground Pro Edition. We're going to interview Kevin Koo on this podcast. This week I made a wrestling road trip, drove 9.5 hours up to Crown Point, Indiana, then double back through Nashville, Tennessee. I hit Black Label Pro with my car full of buddies. I had Cabana Man Dan, Lane, and Twitterless Andrew in the car. God, we had some fun. It was a real, real good time. Cabana Man Dan, if you haven't seen him, is a wrestler out of Alabama. He is a short Filipino man who hits people with flip-flops, and they make a really loud noise. He wrestled in Black Label Pro. The Black Label Pro show was an absolute hoot. If you guys get a chance to see the Black Label Pro show, they had Barry Windham as a special guest. They had some real good matches. And then we came back and hit Southern Underground Pro in Nashville, Tennessee. That's the show you're going to hear about on this podcast with the promoter Kevin Koo. Kevin Koo has been running Southern Underground Pro about 2 years now. And you're going to hear an interview with Kevin Koo. So that's going to be the show that we're going to talk about here. And then next week we're going to hear Mikey Blanton and his fiance Jess. And they're going to talk about the Black Label Pro show. So this is going to be the two-part wrestling road trip diary, basically. And I figured, what a better way to hear about the wrestling road trip than actually from the promoters themselves. I'm going to try to do this 24/7 style, basically, and hear what goes into the anatomy of a show. I think that's real interesting to hear from the promoters themselves, what happens before a show, what happens day of the show, what their concerns were, what their fears were, what went into every single match, what went into the booking decisions behind every single match. That sort of stuff interests me, and I hope it interests you. So if that's the sort of stuff that piques your interest, that's the sort of stuff that you're going to hear on these podcasts this week and next week. So this week we're going to have Kevin Koo. Kevin Koo's going to be on coming up in a minute here. Kevin Koo will be on next. Thank you all so much. And once again, welcome to the Row One Seat One podcast. Over on the Place to Be Nation pop feed, after a two-year hiatus, the Dadcast is back, and JT and Don talk a variety of annoyances, including potty training, lying, Nickelodeon shows, and more. Russell and Sam deliver their Season 1 finality of 90 to Nothing with a look at Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. On Year in Pop, Andy and Scott are joined by J.D. and Dr. G to discuss news, music, and 90s and movies of 1975. Pop goes to the movies with Andy Atherton's review of the new live-action Aladdin. The hard-traveling fanboys continue Avengers Month with an installment of Long Book Hunters, looking at New Age Adventures Volume 1 Breakout. The NBA team dropped a double shot of episodes including Gone Fishing Part 1 and the NBA Finals Preview Pod Blast. This Week in Sports also found the Cowboy and D'Amato running down the NBA Finals and breaking down the series between the Warriors and Raptors. Be sure to keep an eye on our social media feeds as the reboot of Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament starting soon. Over on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, on the Place to Be podcast, Justin and Scott and guest Jake Williams dive into the May 89 Meadowlands House Show in Episode 521. Then they're right back with a double dose of Saturday Night's Main Event from May and July of 89 with guest Peter Winson. In the sixth episode of Row One Seat One, I welcome Daniel McCabe to talk music and his independent wrestling career. And Scott Piscolo, Nate Milton, Steve Willey recap Double or Nothing in Classic TNA and the newest edition of Main Event. On PlaceToBeNation.com, check out Steve Riddle's countdown of top 25 matches in TakeOver history. Also available on the site is this latest installment of Place to Be Nation's excellent WWE Network adventure with an in-depth look at Mid-South Wrestling from 5/26/84. Check out our social media pages and message boards at bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in the conversation today and start researching your list.
Our new life begins! Destroyer!
I'm here with Kevin Koo. Kevin is the promoter of Southern Underground Pro. We were just at Those Who Fear Tomorrow on Sunday. Hell of a show. Absolute hell of a show. Kevin, welcome to Row One, Seat One.
Thank you, Ben.
We're going to do a little bit of a different thing this week. Basically, we're going to do 24/7 what goes into a show, and I figure what better person to have on than the promoter and the tag team champion, spoiler alert, of Southern Underground Pro. Because who better knows exactly the nuts and bolts and everything that goes behind a show than the promoter? Because all the little things that go behind a show, and that's basically what I learned this past weekend on my road trip, is that a million different little things go into a show that no one ever thinks about, and the promoter goes crazy about and worries about, which I'm sure, Kevin, you could probably attest to.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's pretty nerve-wracking.
So basically, I just kind of want to go into the anatomy of a show a little bit. So when did you let's kind of go into when did you start planning for this show? When did you start booking out for the show? When did you set up the date? When did you set up the venue? All that sort of stuff.
Date was set probably like the day after the last show.
Okay, so you guys booked that far in advance? That was what, 2-3 months ago?
Yeah, like 2 months ago-ish. We can only book out a certain amount of time for this venue because it's technically a music venue. And
okay.
They only like to do shows with us when they have concerts after so they can make more money. So they have like specific holds for concerts and stuff like that that we have to work out with. So we can't really book too far in advance. But as far as like booking talent and stuff like that, I try to let them know far in advance as possible. Like, we obviously have all of our regulars that kind of know that they're going to be on our shows, and I try to let them know as far in advance as possible and then just kind of fill in gaps from there.
So talk a little bit about Basement East, because it's probably my favorite venue to go to on my regular loop of shows that I go to. For those who haven't been there, first of all, you should. It's this really hip bar in East Nashville. It is a great place to see a show because it's not like any show place you've ever been to see a show. How did you guys get set up with Basement East? Is it a place you guys have been to regularly to see concerts and said, hey, this would be a cool place to see wrestling? How did that whole relationship get started?
I've actually never been to a concert there.
Okay.
I just haven't had time because I'm never home. But we ran our first two shows at Cobra, which is it's like a smaller punk venue that's down the street from Basement East.
Yep.
And we needed to find a place that fit our needs better and was kind of bigger and was a little bit nicer. So we just started looking around, sending out emails, and then they emailed us back saying that we could do it on like a trial period and see how it went for them. And first show went really well, and then we just kept going from there.
Had they ever done wrestling before?
No, literally, like, pretty much every place that we email, the only place that have done wrestling here are the Fairgrounds, and then Stadium Inn, and then, like, Municipal and stuff like that, like, big-ass venues that I'd never want to really run because it has a weird aesthetic to me, but that's just for sub. Like, I would love to wrestle in those places, and I have wrestled at the Fairgrounds, but it's a different aesthetic, so.
Yeah, I think the aesthetic of Basement East really fits up in that it's really kind of a punk hardcore aesthetic. It's really a bar scene sort of place. You know, as much as I complain that I can't take my daughter there, it's kind of good that I can't take my daughter there because it's very much an adults-only sort of hip, you know, cool place to be. You know, on a Sunday afternoon, you know, just it really fits the spirit of the promotion.
Yeah, obviously, I wish we could do an all ages show because I have a lot of friends with kids like you and Jason Klein and stuff. And unfortunately, some of them can't even come to a show because they have to be with their children. And I would love to have different types of people in there. I don't think we're necessarily like an adult show, you know, outside of cursing. Mm-hmm. But like,
that's true.
I try to tell all the wrestlers and like anyone that's involved with SUP, like, it's a very forward-thinking crowd and very forward-thinking people that help run this entire show. So I don't want anything to make anyone feel uncomfortable or, you know, pretty much I don't want anyone to be stupid or what I like to say is don't say anything here that you wouldn't say in front of your mother. So I try to keep a clean locker room and clean environment so everyone feels welcome in the locker room and out as a fan.
So you started booking on about 2 months ahead of time.
Yeah.
And you've had some running storylines too. So you had, you know, a good chunk of your card pretty much wrote itself almost, right?
Yeah, it used to not be like that because when me and Jesse first started this, it was like we've told the story a bunch of times, but it pretty much started out as a joke, kind of. That seems to be how a lot of stuff for me starts out in wrestling now, which I've had to pull back on joking with people because it ends up me getting on a flyer with a banana, eating a banana in my short shorts.
Which was an amazing poster, by the way.
Yeah, it was great. But I had to stop joking with promoters with that shit. So it pretty much just started out as we just wanted to do a one-off show because we've been talking about it for so long. And we just had like a list of our friends that we wanted to book and be around. And it was going to be like a one-night tournament like the first show was. And first, the winner was going to win like a shitty $6 medal that I found online. And then Jesse messaged me back like a week later and said, hey, I found this like $50 trophy online. Why don't we do that? I go, okay. And then I got bored and was just searching on the internet for like custom belts and stuff like that. And then I found a website that made the belt that we have right now, which is like the standard looking belt that a lot of indie companies have. But yeah. And then we decided to name it the Bone Storm title because we both love Simpsons. And like we literally didn't expect to do a show past our first show, but the first show sold out to the point where we had to turn people away at the door. So we just did another one after that, and then we just started booking shows after each show. We never thought months ahead for like multiple shows. We were just like, oh, we'll just see how this goes, and if it stops being fun or we don't want to do it anymore, we'll just stop. But then just things started to fall in place because we had a lot of good had a lot of good talent with us, and they just kind of knew what they were doing. And then more and more people started helping with us that wanted to see this succeed past what me and Jesse just started doing is for fun, realistically. So yeah, a lot of wild storylines have just kind of fallen into place, and the fans obviously help a lot with that too, because everyone has their own opinion about who they like, who they don't like, whether or not there's good guys, bad guys, whatever you want to have with outdated references about that type of stuff. So it's a lot of it's attributed to the fans because they are very vocal, and that's nice.
Oh, it's the most like pure fan base I think that I've maybe even been around, where, you know, the fans are going to like who they like and dislike who they don't like. And definite cheers and boos and people. I mean, it's absolutely wonderful in that regard. It's basically straight out of the 70s in there. It's fantastic. I absolutely love it. Did you expect that sort of fan reaction, knowing sort of the Nashville crowd and stuff like that, or is this just this weird organic thing that's happened?
I expected a little bit of it because a lot of my friends and Jesse's friends come to the show, and then they just invite their work friends or people they know. A lot of people, our show is actually their first wrestling show, period, which is very wild to me because that's like the most crazy introduction to independent professional wrestling that you could have. You know, people compared us to like ECW when it first started around, which is the most wild compliment I've ever heard in my entire life, because I don't see it like that. Maybe it's just because, you know, I'm so deep in it and I don't really see us like that, but it's probably the coolest thing that I've heard since I started wrestling.
I can see that.
But Yeah, I expected a little bit of it, but then it just kept growing and growing because it helps that people can drink, so they get a little bit drunk and they get a little bit looser. So they're a little bit more apt to have reactions than, I guess, your standard, like, indie crowd that's, like, you know, just at a regular venue that may have beer, but it's, like, they feel weird about getting a little bit drunk because they're around, like, a social setting like that. So, I don't know. It's really cool because I like, I'm straight edge, but I don't care what other people do with their lives. Like, live your truth, whatever. So, more you drink, the more you have fun. That's fine as long as you don't try to touch one of us or hurt each other.
So, let's go to, so you're 2 or 3 months out, you book the venue, you book the date, you start promoting it online. Do you do the social media, or does someone else do the social media? Because that's a huge part of what you guys do.
Yeah, if I had to do social media, I would probably stop doing this altogether, because I run my own social media myself, like, for my wrestling stuff, and then trying to do it to promote a show is... And then promoting shows that I'm on myself outside of stuff is just way too much. So Jesse handles social media, which I greatly appreciate he does. And he does an amazing job at it. Like, I give him input and stuff like that, like what we should post and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, he runs social media, which is incredible.
And you guys have a great social media presence. You really do. It's a really strong social media community, and announcing matches all the time. And there's a build-up, and that's... A lot of your fans are internet fans and people who are really coming out from Twitter and from, you know, Facebook and stuff like that. And it's a lot of promotions could really take note from your social media game.
Thank you. Thank you. That's, like I said, that's all attributed to Jesse, really. Like, he's the man with that stuff. And I couldn't do a lot of sub stuff without him. Like, he made it very clear a couple months ago, like, he was kind of stepping back from booking stuff. So I have a couple other people that help me with that aspect, but he was willing to still help run the social media aspect of it.
So basically the next, any other preparations you have to make before show day, or is the next step show day?
So fucking much, dude.
What?
It's so much. There's so much that goes on with it. Like
what happens before, like what happens? That's what I'm wondering. What happens before show day? What happens Friday? What happens Thursday? What happens, you know, what fly? Are you flyering too? You know, what goes into it?
Yeah, so me and Jesse do physical flyering because we come from the punk hardcore scene where physical flyers are king. So, like, yeah, we do a lot of social media presences, but we depend on the local crowd to come to our shows. So we go to, like, everywhere, pretty much everywhere in Nashville that will have a community board or allow us to put a flyer in their window. So we do that as far in advance as we can. But, like, a lot of places in Nashville will take down flyers from community boards or something, or pretty much anywhere the first of the month. So it's hard to flyer, like, super in advance. It'll also just get taken down and no one will see it. So I just go back there. And if that happens, I just go back there and reflyer it. So we have that. And then we haven't really gone into, like, the press junket of, like, local places because they want a lot of money and we don't have a lot of money. So it's just a lot of word of mouth from, like, our friends to their work friends and stuff like that, that allow us to hang flyers in their, like, offices and stuff like that, which is crazy. And then we have a group chat with all of us that are involved with it that is just constantly running with, like, ideas of what we should do, what we shouldn't do, like, what we need to plan ahead for, because we obviously, like, we're on the independent wrestling TV platform along with a bunch of other places that our wrestlers are on. So we try to kind of stay in line with a lot of different places, I guess. So like Action, places like that, that are kind of close-ish to us that use our guys and girls on a frequent basis. We try to kind of try to align with them so things don't get muddy when people watch one show. Like, oh, why is this person a good guy here, but they're a bad person there? Like, this is really confusing. So we try to stay in line with that. So all of us, like, I constantly am watching any type of wrestling when I'm in my free time, which is semi-limited.
So really, there's even like you even really make sure this guy's a heel here, this guy's a heel here, or this guy has a, you know, you're even being that careful.
Yes, and Dylan Hills helps. Like he's one of the people that help us up and has helped since day one. Mm-hmm. So like he's very good about keeping that together because he obviously watches everything as well. And
That's fascinating. That's really that's the attention to detail that a lot of people don't either do or B, care about, that you guys really go the extra mile with as well, is that there's that, you know, especially in the Southern scene, you know, there's that consistency, you know. A guy like AC Mack comes up with the action title, or Jaden Newman's, you know, the up and coming guy, you know, everywhere. And that, and you know, with Scenic City and with Action and with, you know, all the groups around there, you know, it's, you know, a guy like me who travels to all those groups, there's a common bond, and it's great for me to keep up with and watch. So that's appreciated on my end as a fan.
Yeah, it's kind of like an overarching storyline over like four or five different promotions with us. Yeah. We just try to keep things consistent so people don't get confused by stuff, which is nice.
So what else is on your to-do list before show day?
That's pretty much it for a broad overview. There's like little stuff here and there, like making sure like ring is there on time, making sure wrestlers are there on time and stuff like that. And then myself, like I'll usually always have a show before sup, so I'll be trying to get at least like an hour of sleep and then wake up early and go get my coffee and then do everything else I need to do before show. And then I'll get to the venue and then.
Yeah, because you were a Black Label. That also throws a wrinkle into things. You're promoting a show in Nashville, and you're in Crown Point, Indiana, 12 hours before, yeah. Or something like that. Has to make things a little bit difficult.
Yeah, that's why I'm really appreciative of everyone else that helps with stuff, because if I had to do all this on my own, then there wouldn't be this. I just wouldn't have done it. I would just been like, this isn't worth it. I just would lose my mind. I would hate wrestling, and I just wouldn't be a fan, and I wouldn't do it anymore.
Now, you're wrestling and promoting. Do you wish some days that you didn't do one and did do the other, or did the two kind of mesh with each other, or are you thankful that you're doing both, or do some days you just wish you did one? How do the two mesh?
I've tried to take a show off since last February, but it hasn't happened because there's just been a need for me to wrestle on the cards. And if you talk to Dylan, Jesse, anyone else that helps with this, they'll tell you the exact same thing. They're like, I don't think I should wrestle on every single card because I would love to just sit back and watch the show and not have to worry about a match. But it's just, and I love wrestling, but some days I just want to be like, I just want to watch this thing that I've helped build, like as a fan instead of like a promoter or whatever. But it's been, yeah. I've tried since last February to take off a show. But this hasn't happened, and I don't see it happening anytime soon now.
But you still, I mean, you still have the wrestling bug, obviously, because you're touring all over the country with Dom, and you're touring all over the country as a wrestler. So clearly you still love it, question mark, but
no, that's never a question for me. Like,
yeah,
professional wrestling is the absolute best thing in my life that I have right now. And that people may see that as a sad thing or whatever, but I think it's amazing. I love, cause I used to tour bands and stuff like that, and I stopped for a little while. And then once wrestling started picking up and I could get in a car for like 12 hours and go to a different city and do something, check stuff out and then go home or like go to the next city. Like it fuels my soul to an extent. Like I truly feel great when I'm traveling either by myself or with people, just like shooting the shit, talking, whatever. And if it's like, I've been watching wrestling since I was a kid, obviously. So like I get to talk with like-minded people about wrestling, like old school, new school, whatever, what's going to happen in the future, stuff like that. I love every aspect of it. And that's a big reason why I think I enjoyed doing sup, because it puts another hat on for me. Like I get to think about other aspects of it than just what I do in a ring.
That's kind of the experience I had this weekend, too, when I try to go on road trips, and that was kind of why I wanted to have you on, too, because you were sort of part of my road trip this weekend, is that, like, I'm never happier than when I have my wrestling weekends, too, and my road trip weekends, and you get to have them basically every weekend. That's, like, I'm super jealous in that regard. And, of course, you beat the shit out of yourself when you finally stop at these venues. But you, I mean, you basically get to have, you know, I put a thing up that says everyone needs to have at least one wrestling road trip in their life, and because it's just the absolute best, and you get to enjoy that pretty much every weekend. It's got to be freeing.
It really is, because I have a regular job when I'm at home, and I enjoy that, but it's a case of wanderlust. Like, I always want to be out doing something. If I'm just sitting at home kind of twiddling my thumbs, then I feel like I'm not truly living life. Mm-hmm. I guess when I cracked those two vertebrae in my neck like 2 years ago now, I had to sit at home for like 4 months, just, and for like two of those months I couldn't even work out. I literally had to just sit at home and not do anything, and that was quite possibly the most depressing time of my entire life. Like, that was the first time I've actually been stagnant in my entire life. And I just didn't know what to do with myself. So, like, I started doing therapy 3 times a week. And that was, they only wanted me to go once, but I was like, nah, I have to do something.
Yeah. So, okay, back to the show. I'm just, my jealousy got a hold of me. Back to the show, basically. So, show day, what was on your to-do list on Sunday? What time did you get there? What did your to-do list look like?
So I woke up at like 8:30 to take a shower and stuff. And then Dom and Ali stayed with me because they were both at Black Label. So we wake up, and I've been trying to do a thing where I have like a regular person moment before shows. So we went to my favorite, like a bagel spot. It's called Proper Bagel. It's over near Vanderbilt. And it's just like a really nice Jewish family-owned bagel spot where I get a nice coffee, bagel sandwich, stuff like that, and just kind of get to reset my mind. So we did that, and then we went to Walmart and just bought a bunch of wild shit that we could hurt ourselves and Marco and Dan with.
That was my job at Black Label, and it's so much fun to buy weapons.
It's a bit unnerving because you're like, oh, this is something that's gonna hurt me later on. Why am I buying this? Why am I spending my money on this? This is crazy. So yeah, I did that, and then we get to the venue at 11 because that's when call time is. So fortunately, we have a good number of wrestlers that are on the show, and then wrestlers that want to show up and help at the show to potentially get on future shows to help set up the ring and stuff like that. Realistically, all we have to do when we get to the show is set up the ring. The curtain's already set up, and then we plug in a laptop for music, and that's it.
Literally. There's no, like, because I know Black Label, you know, we got there many, many hours before, and there was a whole lot of setup. And I'm going to talk to Mikey about that, but there was 50 million things that went into it. You guys are pretty much plug and play then.
Yeah, that's how I want to do things, because that's how punk shows run. I don't, like, yeah, it'd be cool to have, like, a nice curtain set up or like lights or smoke or something like that, and I can easily do that, but that's just kind of more stress added on to a show where we kind of already have a set aesthetic that people recognize us for. So if it's not broke, don't fix it, you know.
No, that's awesome. That's absolutely great. And the venue is already, I mean, it looks great, and it looks like it's very you, you know. Yeah. It fits the aesthetic, so that's perfect. That's absolutely perfect. So fans start filtering in. Were there any, I mean, you can answer this if you want, any crises, any things that were, you know, any things that had you panicking last minute?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. Like, I try not to look out from the curtain when the show starts to see how many fans are there, because I'll just be stressing myself out for no reason. And to tell you the truth, I don't even look at online pre-sales ever. Like, I just don't even want to look at that because we always have walk-ups. Like, we're very much a walk-up crowd. Like, some people buy pre-sales just because they want to, but we very much are a walk-up wrestling show, which I think is really cool because that's how, again, that's how punk hardcore shows work. Like, you know, if I could do it and we could have a crowd, I would say, hey, message a punk for the address to the venue, because that's how house shows worked, and I think that's fucking cool. But can't really rely on that in pro wrestling.
Now you guys drew, I mean, I'm bad at crowd estimates, but you drew about what you normally draw, if not a little bit more yesterday. So you had a healthy crowd.
Yeah, I was very happy with it.
So everybody filters in. One other cool thing about Basement East, the only reason I'm recognizing this now is because I had the experience at White Eagle Hall, or you guys had the experience at White Eagle Hall, where you didn't have room to sell merch. It's also a cool area as well for wrestlers to be able to sell merch. How much do the wrestlers appreciate the space?
Oh, so much. Like, that's how people make money, man. At the end of the day, like, you know, what you get paid as a rate or trans is what you get paid as a rate or trans. Like, you make your actual money off of merch sales. Like, pretty much any successful wrestler, I'm sure, will tell you that, or any successful person in a band will tell you that. Like, that's where you make your bread and butter off of merch sales. Like, it would always be a thing when you would go to a show and someone would be touring, like, oh, we're such and such from whatever, Colorado or some shit. We have some merch in the sale. If you'd like to help us out, we'd really appreciate it, because, again, that's how you make your money.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I even, like, Graham Bell, I saw him, he traveled to 3 different shows I've been at the last few weeks from St. Louis, so I'm just like, you know, dude, I'm buying your shirt because you put out the friggin' road miles, and you deserve it, dude, because that dude has worked his ass off recently.
He really has, and, like, he's someone that isn't really a lot of places that have a lot of eyes, I feel like, but he's helped so much. Not like with stuff specifically that I was like, there's no way he can't not have just a straight up singles match.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way. Like, I would feel like a personal piece of shit if I didn't reward that type of behavior, you know?
Yeah. And he was at TWE in Chattanooga a couple weeks ago, just drove out from St. Louis for a little TWE show. He was a Black Label. I'm just like, dude's everywhere I'm at, and I live in Chattanooga, so I'm just like, yeah, dude, good for you.
Those aren't short drives either.
Yeah, not at all. No, St. Louis, 6 hours. So good for him, man. So show starts. I want to talk about a little bit. So are you – what's your position? Are you peeking out from behind the curtain?
I'm most of the time, like, if I'm not on the first half of the card, I'm just out in the crowd or, like, by commentary watching the entire show, because I like to keep a close eye on stuff, because I have eyes and ears everywhere, so people will tell me stuff if something goes wrong, and I usually try to have my phone on me so people can text me. So I try to watch all the matches that I can, just because there's been shows I've been on, and I, like, will go come back from the curtain and I'll ask the promoter how the match was or, like, what they thought. And, like, I don't expect, like, a full critique or anything like that, but most of the time, like, oh, I didn't even get a chance to watch it. And, like, that's a little bit disconcerting because I wanted them to see what I can do. And if it was just, like, a place that just brought me in, I wanted them to see, like, I'm a valuable part to their company. So I tried to, and this isn't a knock at anyone at all, but I personally try to watch all the matches that I can, and I always watch the matches once they get put on the independent TV platform, and then I seriously write an entire PDF of match by match show notes, and I send it to the group text.
Really? That's because I was wondering if you go back and how you go back and watch it, and how you take your notes, and how you, because that's really interesting. That's good promoting right there, actually. Like, I was wondering how you criticize and break down guys. That's really interesting. So to that effect, your first match was Jaden Newman, who's had a storyline there, versus Jeremy Wyatt. Talk a little bit about Jaden's storyline, and then talk about, this is Jeremy Wyatt's first time there. He's known in the Midwest. I love him to death, but how do you end up getting him in?
So that's completely a Dylan Hales thing. Like, I personally love Jeremy Wyatt because he's, like, a real proper professional wrestler, and that's the stuff I love. That's the stuff I really enjoy watching.
He's a pro's pro.
So he sent us an email for, like, our quote-unquote a trial show or whatever we had back in March. But I just felt weird putting him on that because he's like, what, a 10-year vet or something like that. Yeah. I was just like, nah, I need you. Like, if I'm going to bring him in, I want him to have like a spotlight and a specified reason why, or not just like, here's this guy in a match. You know? So we worked with him and he was able to come in on this show. Jaden, who I am so immensely proud of for how far he's come in the past, like,
totally.
Like, he used to be a complete shitbag in Chattanooga that no one wanted to work with, and I think he was on like a third or fourth show with like Chris Kronk and like some battle royal or something like that, and he came out and Andras Lane like punched him in the face or something like that, and he was never seen again. But he's really like, he's really stepped up his game in every aspect, and like, he's very much like, he's getting to where he needs to be like a complete professional wrestler that will be seen in every promotion around the country and then eventually around the world. Like, he has just a really cool charisma about him, and he can do flashy moves, but he can also properly wrestle, which is awesome. Like, that's very rare to see in anyone.
Yeah, I'm so proud of him. He's I drove up with him to WrestleMania weekend, so I spent about 40 hours in the car with the kid, and he's a great kid, and to the point where I make a point to get up to TWE whenever I can just to support him, if anything, because he deserves where he's going, and he's going places.
For sure. He's very appreciative of every single chance that he gets, and he's just so respectful to everyone that he's around. So, like, that kind of attitude can only bring you up, you know? People are going to take notice of that type of stuff. It just sucks that he doesn't have a license or anything or a car. So he's kind of relegated to who gives him a ride right now. But I hear he's getting a car. And
oh, he has a license because he drove my car. Oh, he has a license. He drove my car, and it was the most terrifying hour of my life.
Oh, I'm sure, dude. I wouldn't let that little bastard drive my car.
Oh, no. We were on the highway. I figured I could let him drive a little bit on the highway. And he drove like 45 on the highway. We were getting passed by trucks. It was like, it was my life flashed before my eyes.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah,
no, thank you.
Yeah, hard pass.
But yeah, Jaden's storyline, like, he started out just as a scramble dude, which, like, I like using scrambles and stuff for getting eyes on people that I personally want to see, that I haven't really heard of, and to see what they can do and see if they connect with their crowd. Like, that's straight up how Marco was found out. Like, he showed up to one show, didn't have anything for him, showed up to the second show. After that, he got in the scramble, and then he was just straight go
over his fuck. Yeah.
Yeah. It was fucking wild, dude. I've never seen anything like that, like, on this level. Like, it was just wild, his rise.
Oh, I was there. It was good. I've been there for all of it, man. He's a meteor. He's an absolute meteor.
But we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to Marco.
But Jaden, and then, like, Teddy King, we kind of had, like, an idea for him, and we were just like, we wanted to kind of put a group with him. So we put Jaden with him as JB Newman, and that's a lot of me laughing, because I kind of have a rule with stuff. Like, if I don't laugh at least once during show, then I consider it a failure. So it was like a semi-serious, but also like, this is really funny to call someone JB Newman. And then that happened, and then Manders came into the fold with that, and then Teddy King abruptly retired and went off to the distance, have a kid or some shit. I don't know.
What R.I.P. in peace.
Yeah, exactly. So we kind of had to switch a lot of things around because we were toying with the idea to actually have him be a babyface for us, but that was going to be like seriously a year down the line.
Really? So you booked that far out. You think that far ahead.
Well, we started to do that. With Jaden, like, this needs to be a long game. Like, we'll fill in gaps from there. But so Lost is like my favorite TV show that's ever been created. And when they started that show, they knew the finish or the beginning and the finish of that show, and then they filled in the gap from there. People can talk shit on that, but I love that show. So, like, that's kind of how I saw Jaden. Like, I knew how he was going to start and how he was going to end and how he was going to get there. I could fill in gaps to make sense, and then Dylan could help me with that, and everyone else can help me with that.
Sure.
But we just kind of had to expedite that process super quick, and I didn't know how it would go. It was kind of like a trial by fire for Jaden, where it was like, we need you to be a babyface now. let's see how this goes, if you can connect with this crowd in this way, because people hate him. So there was that one match where I think it was the one where Jesse didn't announce him as Jaden fucking Newman. He was like, I want a good fucking, or I can take a good fucking. I was like, oh, this is going to work.
No, I'm here for a fucking.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And that was right before he turned full babyface. I was like, okay, this is going to be awesome. And then the next show he turned full babyface. I was like, fuck yeah. And ever since then, his positive reactions have just gone bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, and
yesterday was like the biggest reaction he's gotten, I think.
Yeah, and that was a hell of a match, too. He hung with, I mean, Jeremy Wyatt's a veteran. I mean, and here's the thing, too. Jeremy Wyatt's a guy the crowd didn't, and this is a sup crowd. This is the perfect thing about the sup crowd. Jeremy Wyatt's a guy they didn't know, random guy from St. Louis, first time at sup, and everyone got him. Everyone got him right away, and that's as much to do with Jeremy Wyatt, but it's as much to do with the sup crowd, too.
Yeah, and that's super hard to do, especially with our crowd, mm-hmm. who like who they like and don't like who they don't like, and they could have easily given that guy crickets, but man, that just shows how much of a professional Jaren Wyatt is. Like, he really knew his role and he knew how to play that crowd, and I loved that match. Like,
yeah, it was real good. The next match was Craig and Logan, right?
Yes, yeah. I do believe.
So we know Marco. Talk a little bit about Logan.
Logan came to a couple of shows with Marco, and I honestly had no idea who he was, and Marco had just joked that he was his brother. I was like, oh, funny joke, but then I found out he was his actual brother. And then when he started wrestling, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Let's see how this goes. And his first match was at, like, the Scenic City, like, trio show or something like that, I think.
He was in a scramble, like, yeah.
So I was like, oh, well, we'll try this out. Maybe we can make another stunt brother, see what happens. So we put him in a scramble, and he did pretty well. And then I was just like, well, Marco's really pushing for you, so I'm going to give you singles matches and see how you do. His first singles match was with Zach Cooper, and he just kind of died the entire time. So I was like, I just really want to see him in a match where he can show his personality and who he is and what he can do.
And Craig was a perfect opponent, because Craig is literally, if you haven't seen Craig Mitchell is everyone you hated in high school.
Yeah, he's a real dickhead.
He's a total dickhead. He was the asshole in high school.
Yeah.
Just like, as an adult.
He's one of my favorite wrestlers. Like,
he's great.
He does so many things so well. Like, and he's just so hated at stuff, and it's so great. And for someone like Logan, he needed someone like that to have a match with. And I was very happy with that match, too.
Yeah, that definitely went well. Logan is far better than he has any right. Logan's got, what, 20-something matches under his belt or something like that?
Yeah, that kid is way better than he has any right to be.
Yeah, he's...
I could throw him down or something. I got to break his legs or something like that.
Seriously. They, I mean, you know, for their lack of height, they definitely have some skill in that family.
Yeah.
The next one was the next... I have the worst memory on the planet. The next match was the... Bandy match?
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't get to watch all of that match. Mm-hmm. I had to do some stuff in the back. But from what I heard, they got an okay reaction. I'll have to go back and watch
Rockin', that match. What's it? Rockin' what? I forget. It's Rockin'
Rivera.
Rockin' Rivera.
His whole government name is Rockin'.
Is it actually?
Name.
Oh my god, that's amazing. This match was fine. They didn't seem to communicate really well in the ring. It was they seemed to be feeling each other out. But Bandy, I see a lot in action, and he's a guy I got to know. I mean, the fact that he lost and everybody's saying that we want him to come back says a lot about Bandy.
Yeah, for sure. And like Jesse said, that was kind of like a sink or swim situation. Yeah. So. I'm going to go back and really watch that match, take my notes, and give my input as to who should be brought back, or maybe they should take a little break from us.
Yeah, yeah. Bandy was definitely the more over person, even though he lost, and the match was fine. It was perfectly fine. Was Brett Nally the next one, or was there something before that?
I think was Manders and Graham Bell.
Manders and Graham Bell might have been before that, because I know Brett Nally was right before intermission. So yeah, Manders and Graham Bell.
I see this one either, but I heard some shit. Like, and I saw some gifts. I saw Graham Bell die for our sins, being tossed from inside the ring to that pole.
Oh, like, dude, wow. And that pole. So the other thing at Basement East is that there is an inopportune or a poorly placed pole right by the ring. It's a support beam, and when there's a stupid wrestler, a stupid wrestler will take shots on that pole, and Graham Bell went back first, and it made a dong sound. Yeah. Like that you could hear basically in West Nashville. My God, he died for our sins there.
Yeah, that was disgusting sounding.
It was gross. It was absolutely gross.
To throw big dudes at Manders, because his match with Josh Bishop for the last show was probably like the most wild hoss fight that I've seen so long. And Manders is just ready to die for our sins too, for some reason.
Manders is another guy that you guys have kind of, at least for the South, unearthed. And he's an interesting story too, right?
Yeah, so he's like the first graduate of Rollins School, like Black and Brave.
Okay.
I don't think a lot of people know that, but yeah, he's a Rollins kid, but I don't know where he trains now or what, but
played football at Iowa.
Yeah, University of Iowa. Football player, and like he's just a big fucking dude. Like, it's wild how big he is, and just like a thick meat mountain.
So like, mountain.
I don't even remember. I think he was just annoying a lot of us on like social media. Like, everyone he could figure out that was running stuff, he would message. So I was like, fuck, fine, put you in a scramble, see what happens. So he did that, and he's very much a person that can listen and take criticism and kind of grow from it. So I was like, okay, I like this type of person, let's keep going and see what we can do with him. So now he's just like, he's just embedded in a storyline with Jaden, and they will finally have a match. Like, their first, it might be their actual first one-on-one match next month at the SCI sub show.
Yeah.
Up in August. I'm sorry.
Yep. Yeah, I know. I want August to come soon too. Yeah. And that was hell. That was great as hell. And we talked about Mander. We talked about Graham Bell, just the road warrior, and a real good wrestler, Is he?
Yeah, he's kind of unassuming because he comes out with like the goofy bazooka and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. People are kind of thrown off by it, but like,
let's repeat that. He comes out with a bazooka and fires it, and shit fires out of the bazooka.
He's a fucking wild man.
And he's a totally unassuming guy too, like the nicest human being on the planet. And then he comes out with a goddamn bazooka. Like, wrestling's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it's the most wild thing on the planet Earth.
And then Brett and Nelly was the next one, right?
Correct.
Okay. This was the most thoughtful match I've seen in a long, long time.
Completely agree. As far as, like, quote-unquote storyline or a storytelling wrestling match goes, this is probably, like, the best wrestling storyline match we've had. Like,
yeah.
There were points where people were quiet, but I don't think it's because they were bored. I think it's because they were just appreciating what was going on.
We were absorbing it.
Yes. And I couldn't be more proud of those two people. Like, Brett is someone who I, and I'm sure you have known, has been good for a long fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
But he hasn't, for some reason, given a platform for anyone to see him. And, like, I'm hoping more and more places get on the Brett Eisen bandwagon. Like, he's really good at what he does, and he's a scary individual. Like, he's someone
he's I'm unique not
a lot in my life, because I'm a crazy person, but he's someone I'm legit scared of. Like, I know a lot of stories of him. I'm legit scared.
I'm
glad he's on.
He was at TWE, and I was legitimately concerned, because I bring my daughter to TWE. And I was legitimately concerned about my daughter having nightmares about Brett Eisen, to the point where after the show I made a point to have Brett introduce herself. Because I said, I don't want Ava getting nightmares for the next 6 months about Brett Eisen. And Brett was obviously super nice. And then she comes up to me like 2 months later, and she goes, because we were watching more wrestling, and she goes, Daddy, how come Brett's nice to me and you when he's mean to everyone else on the planet?
And likes you.
Like, Brett is, again, people who haven't seen Brett Eisen, do not pass go, do not collect $200. Brett is unique. He is a shit kicker upon all shit kickers. And an alley cat is so goddamn rootable in that venue.
She's gotten so, so damn good at professional wrestling.
Like, yes.
You should just be like a Texas Indian drag cat in all aspects. But man, in the last like 6 months, she's really figured out who she is and what she needs to do to connect to the crowd and how she needs to properly wrestle. Like, that was a match. Like, she, I texted her today, you know, after I had a chance to settle down, like how proud I was of her for that match and like how proud she should be herself from that match, because I've seen her after matches just be like so down on herself, like, man, I wish I could have done this better, wish this went that way, whatever, whatever. But she came from the back and was just smiling ear to ear, and that was like one of the first times I've ever seen her do that.
Yeah, I told her, I said, that was, I said, you guys put real thought into that match and you guys really planned that, and that was the smartest wrestling match I've seen in a long time. And she was just like, yeah, you're right. She was beaming. She was absolutely beaming.
Because it's no secret that people know like what goes into wrestling. Like, everyone's a quote unquote smart fan now, but like, to have real emotion behind that, like, and take people out of their minds that this is a quote unquote fake sport and really feel like, oh shit, she could beat this dude who has like 100 pounds on her. Like, that's the most beautiful, wild thing about wrestling.
Yep. Like, the scariest man on the planet might get beat up by a super nice girl.
Yeah.
Like, unbelievable. And we all bought it. We all bought it hook, line, and sinker. There was that pile driver off the rope, and we all, the entire crowd, bought it.
That was great.
Yeah.
Because she can't pick Brad up for a pile driver. He's a big dude. I've tried it. Can't do it.
Yeah. No way. It was great. It was absolutely great. An intermission, and then you came back with the
Scramble match.
Okay, this is my question. Where do you find your dudes for the scramble matches? Because you had some human beings in this scramble match. Some of whom could do no other profession other than professional wrestling.
Yeah, a lot of them honestly are helping with the ring and ride with people who are on the show.
Okay.
So a couple of them, like two of them rode with Manders, or one of them rode with Manders. The other one helped out at the last show a lot, so he got booked for this show. And that was that Lord Crew dude, Adam Slade. And there was a couple of Indiana kids that always come up here with Mouse and stuff like that. So they're on there. Yeah. And then Jaden was obviously in it too.
That Lord Crew dude has a look and has a presence. And you need to book him again because he has something.
I just want him to be test.
You want him to be test. I could see that.
Pretty threw a test boot, and I got really happy.
I could totally see that. Yeah, he has something.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I like using the scramble matches to kind of feel people out. Because that's, scramble matches are just meant to, like, your best hits, get your shit in, see what happens. So I feel like that's a very good indicator of what someone can do.
And then you had AC Mac Open Challenge. AC Mac is really making his way in scramble in action wrestling. He's a champion there. He's a Georgia guy, but doesn't really do much outside of Georgia. And SUP was really the first non-Georgia promotion to take a chance on him. What was that? Was that a you thing? Was it a Dylan thing? You guys just really noticed him in action and wanted to bring him on out because he's really starting to shine in SUP, and I think he'd shine anywhere. But no one's just really brought him out, and you guys are finally, pulling the trigger on him.
That was very much a Dylan thing from the start.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, I was on an action show that he was on, and he had a really good match with Austin Theory. So I'm like, okay, let's try this out.
Mm-hmm.
So he was willing to make the drive up, and we had him on, and I really enjoy him. Like, he may not be like the absolute best person technically in the ring, but he more than makes up for him by being a shit talker.
Oh, and that's the thing. There are so few independent wrestlers can talk.
Yeah.
And he is so good on the mic. And, I mean, you can just hand him a mic for 5 minutes and he can just vamp.
Yeah, that's very hard to do because a lot of people get off on tangents because their brains go otherwhere. But he's laser focused on what he needs to do, and it's great.
So he went against Peyton Polson, who is one of Brett's guys, right?
Correct. Brett. Yeah. Brett trained him.
Yeah, and he's another one who is far better than he has any right to be. I've seen him a bunch recently, and he is rapidly growing in given his experience.
Yeah, he's making his way up, and I'm very happy for someone like Brett to see something like that. It's really cool.
And then was you guys, right?
Yeah, that was the main event.
Lord, where do we start?
It got a little out of hand. I honestly, like, that's the second ever hardcore style match I've had. They've only been in sub. Like, I had one with Angus Lane. It was like a last person standing match. Mm-hmm. And this one
was wilder.
Got so crazy. I didn't expect it to get this crazy.
So this match was Cabana Mandan and Marco Stunt versus you and Dom for the initial sub tag team championships. And it was no holds barred. Was that that was the stipulation, right?
Yeah.
And anyone who hasn't seen it needs to go back and see it because it is a fucking bloodbath.
Yeah, I didn't expect anyone to bleed that much.
Dom lost a pint, maybe two. Oof.
Yeah.
My God. And Cabana Mandan, I drove Cabana Mandan back and I just said, if you bleed in my interior, I'll kill you.
The funny thing is that man drove, he slept for like a couple of hours and then drove straight to Universal Studios. He's there right now.
I know. Yes. Yeah. No, he's on vacation for the week with his family. Yeah.
So funny.
Yeah. He's such a great road trip partner, by the way. If you get a chance to ride with him, he's an absolute hoot.
He rode me at Black Lake one time. It was awesome.
We had such a good time this week. So it's, what goes into this is kind of the capper here. What goes into the planning for a match like that? You said you picked out the weapons. How do you take me behind the curtain a little bit?
So I messaged Dan and all of them and asked them what they would like for as far as weapons go, and tried to get tables and doors, but it just never worked out. So we worked with what we had. So we had like cookie sheets, skewers, tacks, chairs, and then I did a spot that I love that I stole from Jimmy Havoc, where I took an 8x10 of Marco's and gave him paper cut, and then poured lime juice on his paper cut. So that's straight from Jimmy Havoc because it's great. He's a Deathmatch legend. But yeah, we just kind of worked with what we had, and I think it turned out better than had any right to be realistically. So like, We kind of all sat down and took all each other's ideas and then placed them where we needed to place them. And like, realistically, we didn't call a lot in that match beforehand. Like, we called a couple of like the tag team spots, stuff like that, but everything else was just pretty much on the fly.
That's amazing because I know, talking to Dan, obviously, you know, he got bloodied up on the bell. Was the bell just an impromptu thing?
Very much so. Dom grabbed that bell and rung his bell with it.
Fucking whacked him with it.
It was some wild shit. Like, I look over, I'm like, holy shit, he is gushing blood. Oh my God. Our brand new canvas.
And you got bloodied on the skewers, right?
Yeah, they shoved that shit in my head real bad. God, I didn't expect to bleed that much from skewers, because I've seen people take skewers and like they didn't bleed that much. And I was like, I like got back in the ring, and next thing I knew, I was getting DDT'd, and then I look over and I can't see. I'm like, oh, there's blood in my eyes. That's why I can't see. How am I bleeding this much?
Jesus Christ!
It was a lot.
Had you ever bled that much in any match?
I've never bled in a match before.
Really?
Literally the first time I've ever bled in any wrestling match, like, from the head. Like, I bled from, like I've had a scab on my arm and it came off and I bled from that, or, like, a cut on my hand or something like that, but never have actually bled from my head in a match.
Interesting. Yeah. Are you one of those weird vampires where now you have a taste for it and you want more?
Oh, 100%. 100%. But I won't do it for a while.
Interesting. It's just I talked to a lot of wrestlers, and you know, my instinct would be, okay, I never want to do this again. But your instinct is you want to do another. That's fascinating.
It's like this most wild adrenaline rush. Like you see your own blood, you're like, oh shit, let's fucking go now. I'm ready for this stuff. I can feel no pain.
Jesus Christ. So it was obviously well received. Crowd went fucking nuts for it. And then there was you guys ended up winning. You tore the ring apart at the end and delivered a pile driver. It was a pile driver, right?
The Jerry Lynn pile driver.
The Jerry Lynn pile driver on Mark Cabana Man Dan to win the match. Mm-hmm. So you guys are the tag team champions now. And you have, where did you get the trophy?
It's like crownawards.com, something like that.
You can give him a cheap plug there. There you go.
Yeah.
A cool looking trophy. So you're not going to do belts, you're going to do the trophy?
For now, I thought about getting belts, but I was like, you know what? Our main title is fucking called the Bone Storm title, so I'm not trying to take this that seriously. Like, literally, this promotion is for us to have fun. Like,
that's fair, yeah.
The second I take this seriously, then it stops being fun, so I was like, whatever, I'm just going to get a trophy. I think that's funny and cool.
And then Marco had the emotional moment at the end. You guys let him get some space there, and I mean, he teared up.
Yeah, I didn't get to hear a lot of it because I was trying to get cleaned up and stuff like that. But I heard some of it.
He was legitimately crying.
What I said to him and Dan, like, that was very heartfelt, and that wasn't playing at all. Like, that was just completely the spur of the moment. Me feeling emotion that I felt like I needed to say to both of them at that time where we were all bloody. But yeah, that's something I hope that Swerve keeps on video for when it gets on independent wrestling, because I think that that's a very cool moment, because it's pretty well known that Marco's, you know, going to be leaving soon, but we don't really know when. So that could very well be his last match itself. And I'll say this now, because like he says it himself, like Sup gave him a start. You know, you can 100% draw his path to where he started getting all these wild bookings and stuff like that. Like he had that scramble match at Sup, and then he just started getting more and more matches, and then like Joey saw him at Sup, and then he booked him for Lost in New York, and then he just went from there.
And I think his first title was Sup too, right?
I think he held some titles in his hometown, but I guess it's his first one outside of his hometown. But man, when he won that title, that was the most organic reaction I've seen ever. Like,
it was unbelievable.
Like they've never done. Like that was old school, like fucking ROH style shit.
It was like we all won the lottery.
Yeah.
It was the coolest moment. And then, I mean, so he's our baby, you know, like collectively he's our baby.
Yeah, like I straight up call him my son. Like, I love him to death.
And you know, and he, I mean, he was on Double or Nothing. He was on the first All-In show. Who knows where he may be going? I don't know if he saw, who knows? Who knows? But if he does, he deserves it.
Truly, like, he's worked his ass off for the stuff, and he's just another person that's a good dude. Like, if anything, if I never do anything else in wrestling, I want to make sure that the people who have good souls and are kind people succeed in this thing. Because there's a lot of shit people in this world.
Well, that is a good place to leave it, actually, I think. The show went great. Marco got sent off pretty well. Anything else? You know, anything happened after the show? Anything you want to close on? Any parting words or words of wisdom? The show went off awesome. Successful show, a fun show. Everyone had a blast. You guys lost a lot of blood, but aside from that, it's pretty. Everything went well.
I mean, I guess if I can say anything, like, continue supporting independent wrestling, because wrestling has become a very crazy place now with AEW and WWE kind of battling now, and really somewhat the independents are suffering. Like, places like Beyond are really trying to keep it alive and are keeping alive and helping, but go to your local wrestling shows. Doesn't matter who's on it, doesn't matter where it is. Try to go to local wrestling shows as much as possible, because that's where people hone their craft and that's where you see them.
Awesome. Kevin, your family, dude, I appreciate it, man. And I'm sure I will see you very, very soon.
Yes, sir.
Later, my friend.